great title. I don't know what it means. I'm not sure it's connected to what we're going to do. But if anybody asks you, you tell them that you went to a chug in Gan and Shai Bissam. I think it's probably, the Jews are very slow, it's almost 2,000 years old. It can't be the first God in the 21st century chug in the world. It'll take at least 40 years to really achieve this catch up. And what are we really doing? I tell you the truth, that's that I don't really know, but that would sound so good. So I'll think of something else. So what we're going to do is we're going to discuss important issues. Important issues in Yiddish. So the unofficial title is Important Issues in Yiddish. I know. And the question is, why should we be? The first question is, why should we do it? The truth is, in a place like Shabbat HaRetzion, it might be taken as a given that you're supposed to be intellectual and discuss and explore different issues. In the history of Yiddishkeit, it's been a little controversial. There's always been a set of opinions that said that either what we're doing might be a waste of time in general, or people tell it in particular. Even antithetical, even unhealthy for Yiddish. I want to, first of all, go over some of the issues involved in discussing Yiddish before we all decide that, well, before some of us decide we're going to stay, and we don't convince too many people to leave. And there are a number of arguments which should be brought against spending time trying to understand questions of Emuna or Yiddishkeit or anything else. One argument, which I'm not going to discuss, even though it's a valid argument, says that it's dangerous, it's very complicated questions, and the answers over the years, there's been a lot of answers and a lot of disagreements, and nothing's ever proven. In general, philosophy, nothing's ever proven, and therefore it tends to confuse people. This is not exactly what his point was, but one of the famous expressions of this idea was done by the Ravid in his Hasaga on the Rambam, where the Rambam presents in Hechot Mishnah Torah and Sefer Halacha, he presents a quick explanation of the famous problem of Yidiyah B'chira, of the God's foreknowledge and free will. And the Rambam's explanation basically says, well, we don't really understand what it means, so therefore we can't ask the question. And then the Ravid says, if you didn't know the answer, you shouldn't have asked the question. Because now everybody understood the question, but they don't understand your answer. So you just sort of ignore it, and therefore you wouldn't mess people up. That's more or less the answer that says, if you don't have really, really good answers, you're not very convincing, but what you're going to do, that's what we are going to do, discuss different possibilities and different ways to approach your question, you're not doing anybody a favor by raising the question. Okay, so that's a practical. That's a practical argument. And there's some truth to it. Before we dismiss it, we should realize that there is some truth to it. In other words, at some point, it might really not be advisable. Why should it be advisable to mess yourself up, to confuse yourself? Yeah, when I was in my graduated college, I went to speak to a Lichtenstein, which is in America, about graduate school, and I told him I want to go into philosophy. So he said, why? I said, well, you know, it's about important issues. He said, not really. There hasn't been a better publication for about 300 or 400 years. As an example, it's the only example. English literature, that's about important issues. Philosophy is about whether or not it's mutter to talk about important issues, and how one should speak about important issues, and whether or not speech that one uses to talk about important issues is in fact speech. After 30 years of that, you then decide whether or not you should bother doing it or not, and most philosophers today think you shouldn't, because you really can't say anything substantial about anything. It was a very good argument. I did it anyhow. I think I got something out of it, but it was, there's something to it. You shouldn't be wasting time on putting your toes. The famous medieval comment, this is a real medieval comment, that claimed that scholastic philosophers of the Middle Ages, who are the people who, the Jewish version of them, will be very prominent in our discussions, who are concerned about how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. It actually is a shy like that in scholastic literature. It's more important than sound. It has to do with the nature of angels. But nonetheless, it could be that basic questions of faith and our attitudes to the Kodesh Baruch Hu and how we are Shomei Mitzvos and learning Torah and Olde Hashem is not really going to be affected one way or the other by the number of angels that can dance on the head of a pin or some other questions which we might discuss. So that's, it's a consideration. Okay, I'm just going to ignore that consideration. As it will be clear as we continue, I think that there are positive things I want to get out of it, and therefore it's worth trying. Somewhat more serious for our purposes is the argument, which is in truth a minority view in the history of Yiddishkeit. Well, I'll explain why that's not necessarily true, but if you look in the library, it's a minority view. It says that philosophical explorations of Yiddishkeit are antithetical to Emunah. They undermine Emunah, not because they make you become a cultist, but because intellectualism undermines Emunah. Emunah is something that's more in the soul, more in the feelings, more in the undifferentiated kind of attitude. Or as an example, the Taina might be that little children have, and the word I choose now is indicates what the argument is about, have a more pure, not a more developed, but a more pure emunah, a more pure relationship with God than the greatest philosophers, the greatest religious philosophers. And that argument is advanced, perhaps somewhat paradoxically, by the Bala Tanya. I say paradoxically because the Tanya is a long book that's very complicated and very intellectual and takes a lot of understanding. But one of the arguments that in a very intellectual, developed manner, Bala Tanya advances is that you shouldn't be an intellectual. He quotes the pasuk "Nidme ki behemos nidmu," to say that the emunah of a cow is the goal of human emunah, and the way to get the emunah of a cow is not to, well, I guess not to be the Tanya, but that's what he says, is not to engage in philosophic speculations. He has an interesting quote. I have a very poor memory, but the really weird chassidic about stay in my mind. And the Tanya quotes the pasuk "Peti ya'amin l'chol davar." Everybody who understands the pshat means that fools believe everything. And the Balatanya interprets it to mean Peti Yamin L'chol Dabar. Real Emunah. Emunah L'chol Dabar, that's the Emunah of a Peti. The Emunah of a fool is real Emunah. The Emunah of a Chacham is not so real. In other words, the argument is simplicity, that specifically in the area of Emunah. Not true in other areas. I mean, no one would click, well, nobody who we would care to mention in this room would say that this is true for Maseches Gittin. It's better to understand Maseches Gittin without using your head than using it. But in the field of Amunah, there are people like that in this room, in the field of Amunah, there are those who would argue that the more you understand and you begin to analyze, you somehow ruin the idea. That it's simpler and more wholesome. And what happens when you begin to analyze? You begin to cut it into little pieces and then you have to put it back together. So it's like if you cut a person into little pieces, you might understand them better, but he'd be dead. And more or less the same thing is true of Emunah. It's simple, it's a leap of faith, and it doesn't involve neither proofs nor excessive intellectual understanding. The foremost person who advances that opinion in the history of Yiddishkeit is Nachman Bessel. He's probably the only person who says that if it's logical, then it's not correct. And Emunah, I say that he's the only person in Yiddishkeit, but a lot of people will say that in other fields, in India. But among Jews, it's a relatively rare notion. It's a little extreme. He doesn't say that you don't need proper philosophic understanding to be a Maimon. He says that if you can understand it logically, you've lost it. Only those things which don't make sense are true Emunah. Partially said because he wanted to make me laugh, partially said because he wanted to make his chassidim not laugh, and partially believed it, partially he genuinely believed it, but it's a minority view. The fact that it's a minority view doesn't mean it's not correct. And this chug is based on the opposite notion. I explained this attitude. I think we should be sensitive to it. There's something to it. In other words, it is true that knowing a lot of arguments for something is definitely not the same as believing it or faithing it, having become part of your makeup. For instance, I mean, and it's true, and it's also definitely true in many, many fields that it doesn't, you don't necessarily need understanding. For instance, let's take as an example. It's a good example. We'll use it often. I think it's informative. Most of you won't actually understand it, but you've seen movies, you can guess at it. If someone is married, not married, someone has a relationship with a very close friend. analyzing the friendship, analyzing the marriage, analyzing the love, does not necessarily add to the actual experience. In fact, it may ruin it. In other words, if you have a loving relationship with your wife, it doesn't necessarily add, and it might in fact kill it if you then say, well, what does that mean exactly? And what is our relationship based on? And like, what do we really think about each other? I think it's a fair thing to say, and I believe, well, unfortunately, most marriage counselors will not agree, but it very often is an unhealthy thing to do. It may be a recipe for divorce. So this argument can be made about God as well. If you have a good relationship with God, you have it. If you don't, you don't. But trying to understand the relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu does not necessarily, and I agree, does not necessarily accurate. Although, what I'm going to try to show, and we're going to try to do in the message in the course of the year, is to show that it does. To show that, at least in this case, if you have the right yisodot, and you've done the right work, that it will deepen, and it'll in fact make the difference between having an adult relationship and a child relationship. To use the same example, it's true that children love their parents very much. It might be true that the love of a child for his mother is purer, I don't know, maybe even greater, I don't know, measure it, let's use the word pure, is purer than the love of the father to the mother. It's simpler, and therefore it might be purer. But it's also more immature, I mean, and the two go together. And therefore, the very yitaron, the very advantage, is a disadvantage. And even if the Balatani would be right, we're not going to become children again. If he's right, I'm not so sure that you can even get to that point. And therefore, since we are mature adult people, it might be who us that our relationship with God should be mature. Okay, that's for Kesha to the Hakdama. Now I'd like to give a test. I've been in Yeshiva for many years. Next door there's a teacher's college, and amazingly enough, I am authorized to sit in on student teachers and mark them, despite the fact that I probably the worst teacher in Yeshiva. I have to write it. I have to fill out a form that says, did they use the blackboard? Do they use multimedia things? So I say yes or no. I don't know how to write a backboard myself. But I'm a professional teacher. I have an authorization from next door. So I decided to use a modern technique. I'm going to ask you a question and we're going to vote on it. Okay? And I'm going to read four lines from a very distinguished philosopher who I hope none of you will recognize the Keta, otherwise it will ruin the test. And you're going to tell me who it could have been. It's going to be a multiple choice test. We'll limit the number of possible answers, and you're going to tell me who I'm quoting. Not counting the people in the first row who might have seen the name of the Sefer Mikra. Okay, the following are the possibilities. Bachia, that's the Chovas HaLevavos. Okay, that's answer one. Answer two is the Ramban. Answer three is Rambam. Four is the Besht. You know the Besht is? Yeah. And five, no, you only put that four more for choice. That's, I'll give two more. Well, that's six possible answers. Five would be Rav Chaim Vista. And six will be Shlaima the Kalma. If anyone is really, really, really stubborn, I don't think you should even consider this one, but seven to eight. Aaron Lichtens. Okay, here's the quote. Kavanat kol ha-mitzvot שנאמין באלוקינו ונודה אליו שהוא בראנו. והיא כוונת היצירה שאין לנו טעם אחר ביצירה הראשונה ואין כל עליון חפץ בתחתונים מלבד שידע האדם ויודה לאלוקיו שבראו. Let's skip two more lines. Let's say it again. Shayud bnei adam akom yitkatzu biyodu lekel shebraam vehim tziam v'yifarsemu ze v'yomru lefanav briyotecha anachnu. The main line is she'ein kel elyon chefetz batachtonim. God has no other it's extreme. God has no other desire in the sublunar world, in the lunar world. Milvat she'ida ha'adam v'yodeh l'elokav shebra'o. Person should know and confess and say, right, and confess that God created him. Okay, now let's vote. Who thinks that statement is from the Rebbe Bachya? You have to, there's no I don't know. I know none of you know. Okay, so it's just it's pure guessing. I don't know what you're gonna guess. Okay, who votes for Rebbe Bachya? The Chumash Sefer votes. Oh, that's good. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Okay, Ryan, what do you think? No. Okay, we have 14 votes for Rebbe Bachya. This is supposed to be done electronically, not this is like bing. Okay, who thinks it's the Ramban? Oh, forget it. You obviously know the answer. So 8 people think it's the Ramban. Who thinks it's the Ramban? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Who thinks it's the Baal Shem Tov? That's a really good answer. 6. Who thinks it's Rav Chaim? I thought it's Rav Chaim. Okay, who thinks it's Shlomo Kalman?
Yeah. It's the name of our image here.
I don't think it's Rav Chaim. Okay. Obviously, somebody here has been reading the Ramban. Because yes, it's from the it's a statement of the Ramban. It's extremely not appropriate to Rabbeinu Bachya. I'm happy to some people answer Rabbeinu Bachya. Why would anybody answer Rabbeinu Bachya?
Because they don't know Rabbeinu Bachya.
He likes Kaddish Baruch Hu. Right? How come no? Why do so few people pick the Ramban?
You're
like, oh, you've been watching too many game shows.
How come nobody
picked up Chaim? No, I said, listen, now Chaim was just careful about
that. Wait,
he wrote a letter to somebody. He expressed himself. Ramban, it's a statement of Ramban, the end of Pasha's Bo. It's a very, very important Ramban for the reason it's a very long Ramban on the mitzvah of tefillin. Now we know what the Ramban is. We'll let him get it. The Ramban, Rabbeinu HaGadol, as he was called in Spain, the most important mefarish of the Gemara in the medieval times. Maybe ever. He doesn't just say that it's important to daven, which is the he skips us, that's why you should go daven. He says, Ein ta'am acher v'yitzira. The only, now I'm not saying that he's right, the Rambam would disagree, many people disagree, but this is what the man says, there is no other purpose in creation. The purpose of the world, the reason why God created the world, the word chefetz here doesn't mean like in the way we use it in modern Hebrew. It means I want something. Chefetz means desire. God has no, basically means God has no nachas. God has no care. God has no enjoyment. He has no chefetz. Chefetz means desire. God has no desire. He has nothing that gives him pleasure in this world other than sheyida adam v'yodeh l'lokav shebra'o. The one I skipped. The kavanat robamut hakol b'tfilot. Strange Ramban, I've never heard this being a chiyuv. Ramban says the reason why you should daven out loud, he obviously claims you should. Bekavanat bateach nesiot, the reason why you daven together. Bezchut tfilat harabim, the difference between davening alone and davening to tzibur. Zeu, sheyeh lebnei adam makom yitkapsu biyodeh lekel shebraam, vehim tziyam, vifarsemu ze, yamu lebanav biyotech anach. So from all of the back to Ramanu Kota Akur, everything Ramanu and all the learning he did and all the mitzvahs he did, he says it all comes down in the end to not to being Oved Hashem, which many other people would say is the purpose of Torah and creation. Ramanu says the purpose of the world and the purpose of mitzvahs and the purpose and what everything God wants is not Avodas Hashem, and you should do God's will, but it's that you should recognize and say it out loud. Recognize and publicize vipassamu together, out loud, in shul, that shehu b'ra'an, that he is the creator and we are the creator. Now, without going into the details there, which are very important, but that's Ramban specifically, just taking what Ramban here is saying, without understanding the exact philosophy that goes about it, is that the purpose of the creation of the world, and the purpose of, this comes after explaining a dozen mitzvahs, mezuzah, tzitzis, tefillin, yitzias, Pesach, and other others, the purpose of all these things is that a person should have a correct and expressed understanding of his relationship with God. You should know that. And he explains half of Torah and all of creation in order to have that situation. In other words, and again, I'm not going into why the Ramban says it specifically, why someone else should call it, but the Ramban is saying here, stripping away the details, he's saying is that the purpose of creation is that you should have proper understanding. Now, it's true, it's a very simple statement here. You don't have to be a great theologian to know, or to say, or to mean, that God created me and I'm his creation. But you do have to understand. He obviously, if you realize the man is saying, for this reason, the Torah says you should put on tefillin every day, and with tzitzis every day, and kiss mezuzah every day, because it takes, it is more complicated than just saying. And therefore he says, you have all these mitzvahs over and over and over again, v'lefichach amru zehei zahir v'chol she'v'chol sha'a adam odeh bahen, v'zo kabanat ha'Torah. In other words, proper and deep and expressed. The difference, one of the reasons why thinking and discussing it is because it's true that the little child has a great kind of emunah, but he couldn't possibly express it. He doesn't understand what he's feeling. It's the amorphous feeling that a child or a simple minded has. Yeah, but if you ask him to say it out loud, he couldn't say it because he doesn't know what he's feeling. And it might be true that when you say it out loud, that actually moves it a little bit, because there's more there than you express. What's the danger in philosophy, or even just talking in general? Is that the words leave out the thing you're trying to express, the internal feeling, and then you begin to believe only the words and not what was there beforehand. By concretizing it, by expressing it, we lose in translation. But the man here is saying that the purpose of the world is to know and confess and express and publicize our relationship with God. Okay, so that, I put that as an example. That's a statement of intent. As to, again, perhaps at some point in the near future, we'll discuss exactly what the man is trying to say and why some people disagree, and what the man really believes here, whether that's the exactly right point. I'm taking it now big at all, not the details. The idea that the man is saying is that if you don't have an understanding, and you can't express it, and you can't explain it, the relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, then you have what? Not missed the mitzvah said in the Torah, like the Rambam would say, but he would say, you miss the entire ballgame. Okay? Now, so if somebody thinks that he gets to this status without coming to this school, there's no problem. I came to this understanding without coming to this school. It's obviously possible. Ramban didn't come to this school, and the other people also did. But if you don't think that you've reached this, then it's worth trying to understand it better. We may or may not succeed, but it's definitely a good thing to do. Since we're calling Ramban, I want to call another Ramban. This is Ramban found in Sefer Torah Adam, in the Shabbat edition, page 281, Vesh Peyav. The man has a long discussion of a problem which we'll talk about in a couple of months, the problem of evil. How do we explain that what he calls Sadik Ve'Ralo, Rasha V'Tov. Basic problem in theology. How does a good God allow for evil in the world? The man has a long discussion. He has six or seven answers, one on top of the other. First of all, you don't know what evil means, secondly, you don't know what God means. He explains a lot of tibbutz. Each one doesn't quite answer the question completely, so that's the next one. Finally, he says that if the sixth answer doesn't take care of all the possibilities, there's a seventh answer, which is a soul. So he can't explain it to you. And the last answer is Kabbalah. The soul is what he calls Sora Yibur, which was more or less later almost called Sora Gilgul. So that's the next answer. And then he says, and it doesn't explain it 100% either. A sof davar ra'ui la'amin b'zayinyan l'chol bar mikreu pega ki mikreu b'tzadato ala monomu pisho v'yashuva l'amda mehem b'tshuva. He says, in the end, you should just believe that if something bad happens to you, it's because of chet, because you deserve it. Even if I can't explain exactly, I've tried to explain, give you a lot of explanations, about 10, 15 pages long, but in the end, you just have to believe. Etc. Then he says the final question. V'im tish'al aleinu, now you'll ask me, Rabban, kevan she'yesh inyan ne'elam b'mishpat, since in the divine justice, there's something that's unexplained, it's ne'elam, it's not understandable, והכל בצדק ובמשפט ונצטרך להאמין בצדקו מצד שופט האמת יתברך ויתעלה. And if in the end we're just going to have to believe because of blind faith, אז למה תטריח אותנו ותצווה עלינו ללמוד הטענות שפירשנו והסוד שרמזנו? So why did you bother with the previous 15 pages making us work our way through this difficult treatise? And it was a tircha. למה תטריח אותנו? Why did you make us read what you don't say? If in the last line you say that in the end, you have to have blind faith. So philosophy didn't give us anything. It didn't even give us a right answer. Apart from the fact that the right answer messes you up. You don't have a right answer. In the end, what is this long book, what does this long session come to say? You should believe that God shall faith emet din tzedek, and it's no, and you have to believe it. So why did you bother with the philosophy? The man answers. למה תטריח אותנו ותצווה אותנו ללמוד את הטענות שפרשנו בסוף שרמזנו ולא נשליך הכל על הסמך שנעשה בסוף שאין לפניו לא אב לה ולא שכחה. Why not just in the beginning, so if we say we believe that God has no injustice and no forgetfulness. וכל דבר רב משפט, זו טענת הכסילים מועשי חוכמה. This argument, and there's not a man who claims that he has all the answers. He said, if I don't have all the answers, to argue that because we don't have all the answers, therefore we should just believe, just have faith, זו טענת הכסילים מועשי החוכמה. This is the argument of fools who despise wisdom. כי נועיל לעצמנו בלימוד שהזכרנו להיותנו חכמים ויודעי אלוקים יתברך מדרך הקל ומרסה. The advantage of discussing the discussion that I presented, even if it doesn't solve the problem, is that now in the end we will be chachamim v'yodei Elokim barach miderech hakel u'mimasav. That now we will be believers, just like the simple people are believers, but we are believers because we will be chachamim and yodei Elokim miderech hakel u'mimasav. We will have a basis for our blind leap of faith. In the end, you have a blind leap of faith, but it's off something. And he says, understanding what is the basis for unproven and unjustified faith is a higher madrega than simple faith. Why is it higher? He doesn't say why. He says, because we'll be chachamim, yodei elokim. Because that's called to be yodei elokim. The very knowledge and belief that's informed is itself the goal. And I stress, this is not the Rambam, who thinks that intellectualism is the purpose of the world. This is Ramban, who thinks that knowing that God, just saying that God created me, that's the purpose of the world. But he says, if you say it out of a deeper understanding, that's different than just saying it because you put yourself that you have to say it. And this is the second reason, which is less important for my purposes. Niyem aminim ubotchim b'emunato ubenoda ubenelam yutem b'zulatenu. He also claims that it's a more sure knowledge. The more you, even if in the end you have to make assumptions, but the less you make assumptions you make, and the more you know, so it gives you better strength of character. You'll have better bitochim, meaning bitochim b'munatam. That's a practical consideration. I'm interested in the first one. He says, even if the final result is the same, there's a difference between emunat haksilim v'mo'asei hachokhmah. There's a difference between believing like a fool, who still can't be minimized. It's never used as a compliment, except by the Balatani. There's a difference between the pure belief of a fool and the troubled belief of a chacham. And it's clear where the Ramban is putting his point. And therefore he says you have to read, in this particular case, you have to read the arguments that I presented as to what it means, what is Ra, what is Tov, what is God, what is justice. If you know those arguments, in the end realize, stop, I didn't quite understand it, but wow, I'm much more chacham than I was in the beginning, and therefore I would say a bigger ma'amin, but I'm a better ma'amin. And the man says, that's why you have to do it. If you don't understand that, then this is the ultimate argument of somebody who wants you to come to the chug. If you don't understand it, you are excelling in Olai Sachachma. Anyone who doesn't agree with this argument is a fool, and someone who despises it. Any hands raised for the fools? And no, I'm asking you a question. I'm asking you if you want to join the group I said in the beginning, I'll ask this question in a second. I said in the beginning that in the history of Judaism, so the opinion that says that it's not good to be a ma'amin mi-chokhmah, but it's better to be a ma'amin kipeti, is a minority opinion. The truth is that's a little bit of a complicated way to count. Because when we count opinions, we only count people who write books. And people who write books are people who, generally speaking, like chokhmah. People think, no, you should just believe. They don't get to write a book, because it'll be a very short book. The time is an unusual exception to that rule. But generally speaking, those who said that philosophy is a waste of time didn't get to write a book about it. Maximum, they wrote a letter to someone. We have a letter like that by someone who you actually never heard of, but nonetheless, it was basically found in the Geniza. A letter by Rav Moshe Taku, who was one of the Balei Tosfos, it's quoted like 5 or 6 times in Tosfos, where he claims that Sajidon was a kofer. Sajidon was an apikoros. Because Sajidon said that God doesn't have a body. So Rav Moshe Taku said, he's an apikoros, he doesn't believe in God. That's just another way of saying that God doesn't exist. Because he said God doesn't have a body. Philosophers have this thing that there are things that are spiritual, things that are a body, but we simple Jews know that if you don't have a body, you don't exist. So he said that Sajidon was a kofer. And there are other people who express opinions like that, but it's really hard to track them down. So that's why I said it's minority. It could be that if we have a democratic vote, really ask all of Amisrael to vote, it might be a majority opinion. Generally speaking, the more ksidim than the Rav Chachamim in any given group, perhaps even in any given room. Even in Yeshivat Har Etzion. So when I said that it's a majority opinion, I'm talking about the majority opinion in the library of Yeshivat Har Etzion. There, if you count all the books, you find that most of those books believe in one way or another, in one sheet or another, whether it's Kabbalah or philosophy or something or other, in trying to understand things on a deeper level than the Suda before we begin. Yeah. Now, what was the question you wanted to ask? I'm not sure which words are the appropriate words to use. It's a better quality. Okay, the man doesn't use the words, but it's good. Okay. It's highly encouraged. Ravan says there is a to'elet. The question was ma to'elet yesh. His answer is the to'elet is no'il. No'il is the same shorish as to'elet. There's a benefit in what we're doing. The benefit is it will be chachamim v'yodei yodei elokim v'derech hakel u'mimasai. It'll be a basis for our beliefs, and it won't simply be and this is roughly speaking a moderate opinion. The Rambam's opinion is much more extreme. That's because the Rambam is the Rambam. The Rambam has an internal philosophic opinion which states that if you believe something but don't know why you believe it, in other words, if it hasn't been proven, if you don't feel the necessity to believe it, then you don't actually believe it at all. The Rambam says in Ranabuchim that if you believe in God because your parents told you to, and you really believe in God because your parents told you to, but you don't know the proof, meaning his proof, for the existence of God, then you have a relationship with yourself, a relationship with your own imagination. Whereas to know something because it's been proven logically is a relationship with the thing. Just to explain it to the Galachas, the comparison is, if you see something because it's there, so there's a reason why you have a nervous reaction in your eye, because light is coming from the wall, then you relationship with the wall. But if you see a wall because you imagine it, but it's the light isn't coming from the wall, it's coming because I say, I see it, I raise it in my own head, then you have no relationship with the wall, you have a relationship with yourself. So I'm just saying this is true about God. If you know God because the light of God is shining on you, which for him meant philosophic proofs, but you could say the same thing in another way, but somehow God's presence is evident to you, then your relationship with God. But if you believe in God because you say you believe in God, and you want to believe in God, and you imagine you believe in God, then your relationship with your own head. And if the Rambam comes to the conclusion that those people believe in God because their parents told them, but they haven't read the proof, have no relationship with God at all, even though they're big tzaddikim, and they, you know, said the big tzaddikim, even though they're involved topsei ha-Torah, that's his expression. Most people who are topsei ha-Torah, they adhere to Judaism, Rambam says, are like blind people fumbling their way outside the wall, that's outside the building, that's outside the room, where God is safe. But that's a little extreme. You should know that there's a parallel to that in learning as well. Or in Shmiras Mitzvahs, the Mahashal, in the Hakdama to the Yom Shoshomo, in one of that parts, I think the Beitza, says that if you're Shomer Shabbos, but you don't know why it's usher to do what you're not doing based on the Gemara, based on the Psukim, then you're not really being Shomer Shabbos. To be Shomer Shabbos is to be Shomer Shabbos because God said you're not allowed to do this, and you have to know that when you do it. In other words, if you don't know Kata Akula, then you're not doing mitzvahs. That's a pretty extreme opinion, and the Mashal is a pretty extreme person. By the way, not someone who's particularly, not usually counted as being a great philosopher in Judaism. Mashal wrote a letter to his cousin, the Ramah, where the Ramah had accidentally quoted Aristotle. And the Ramah said, who? Aristotle? What do you know about Aristotle? So the Ramah said, I didn't mean Aristotle, I meant the Ramah. He said, when do you have time to read the Ramah? So he said, well, the Ramah said, I read it. It's Mashal lo yom v'lo laila. So Mashal said, I don't have time like that. There's not enough time. I decide yom v'lo laila, I have to learn Gemara as well. So he wasn't actually a great philosopher, but he said, if you don't understand what you're doing, then it doesn't count, even if you're doing the right thing. That's a parallel in Olam HaMasi to what we're talking about here in the Rambam, but Olam HaEmuni. Rambam is far less extreme. He doesn't say you're not doing anything. He just says, though, that the more you understand, the better. And the better you understand it, whether or not you'll, in the end, have answers to all the questions or not, but the better you understand it, that's your relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. If I can put the two of us together, they should do that. Run together, but a person in the meaning of existence, be able to say, Ata baranu banachnu briyotecha, and I know what I'm talking about. I have a basis in actions in the world, in hashkacha, and seeing what's going on. To be able to say that statement, and I really, therefore, I feel it in a different way, and I know it in a different way than I would if I would merely say it as a ksil, but I say it as a chacham. Yes.
Two things. One, the Ramban and the Rambam don't seem to really be saying such different statements. Mm-hmm. They're just saying, essentially, you have to understand how to grow up to the best of your ability. And number two, I don't understand why we say the Rambam such an extreme opinion when he's just saying, don't believe in Hashem. For example, like Rabbi said, because my parents told me, because that's not really believing in Hashem at all. That's not so extreme. It seems logical.
He's not saying don't do it. He's not just recommending philosophy.
I'm saying.
Rambam is saying that if you don't know the proof of the existence of God, how many people in this room know the proof of the existence of God? Let's face it, there are no proofs of the existence of God. None of you know the proof of the existence of God. All the Rambam's proofs have been disproven. Rambam says if you don't know a proof of the existence of God, you don't believe in God. And you don't have a relationship with Kadosh Baruch Hu. You can't get to Olam Haba, according to the Rambam, unless you know a valid, logical proof. This is a God. I hope that's extreme, because if it's not extreme, then we're all up the creek with our paddles. So, in that sense, it's extreme. Rambam does not agree with that statement. And the reason is, we'll talk about this when we'll talk about the meaning of life at some point in this study. And the Rambam thinks that the only valid, the only worthwhile thing that a person can achieve, the only worthwhile thing a person can achieve is yidiyah, is knowledge. That is not the opinion of the Rambam. There's also a big difference between that God created me and saying that God exists. The Rambam was talking about philosophy, but the Rambam was talking about existential dependence. A person should recognize that he's created by God. The Rambam is talking about knowing truths, metaphysical truths. But no, I don't gain by getting you not to like the Rambam. Wonderful Rambam. Presumably there are people today who are Rambamists. I'm not one of them. But I like Rambam a lot. So if you don't think it's extreme, that's wonderful. There are people who are more extreme than Rambam in the world. And Rambam is more extreme than Rambam. even though it's Zvokhi and Rambam. Unless part of the other Jews, Shepherd and Shepherd Zvokhi and Rambam. But Rambam, in this point of view, Rambam is a big extreme. Rambam says that most of the Jews he knows are not going to Omar. And he's referring to the people next door who were learning Torah Mishor Mitzvahs, not the people next door who were in Yerush Katz. Rambam would not say that. He says you'll get further than Omar if you work at it. That's it.
There's an argument on how to find that might be extreme, but to say that at least the beginning part of the statement, the first part of the statement was, that's probably the goal to have understand, not just believe in the
Rambam. Okay, that's why I quoted him. That's why I quoted the Rambam. I'm adding him to the list, but he's at the edge of the list. Yeah.
So it's sort of a similar question. Since so much of Judaism is based on faith, isn't it kind of strange to say that, I know it's like very simple, but like, that you should prove it, shouldn't believe it, it's not proven? Like, you don't have proof that you cross the protected Dead Sea and stuff. I mean, it's written in the Torah, and there's a lot of things like that, but like, you don't necessarily have physical proof of something. So, I mean, since so much of the Torah is based on that, like, isn't it like,
okay, so one of the things we're going to talk about, first of all, I didn't use the word proof, Rambam used the word proof. That's one of the reasons why Rambam is extreme. Rambam doesn't talk about proof, he talks about knowledge, and Rambam doesn't mean proof when he says knowledge. But one of the things we're going to talk about is what can be proven, what does it mean to prove something, what does it mean to believe something based on more or less knowledge. And that's one of the things which will take us in different areas. That's what we're going to be doing. We're going to see is what is the rational basis and rational problems, and to what extent does it constitute, if it's possible to say that, truth, I'm talking about the truth of God, to what extent is it a basis, and the mishmash which the Ramban here is talking about. In the end, I have a certain amount of faith. The faith is based. It's not either or. The Ramban that I quoted is saying is that it's not either or. Your faith, your blind faith, so to speak, should be based on the different levels of knowledge. And therefore you try to arrange this kind of a pyramid. It is true that Ramban is saying, and we'll have to talk about this as well, is that if you don't have some amount of faith, you're not going to get very far, because today we're much more skeptical than Ramban. Ramban told you can prove a lot of things. Today, basically, philosophy doesn't mean you can prove almost anything. But nonetheless, there are bases for the base of the pyramid is wider than the peak. But the question you ask is a question which is going to be either directly or more usually indirectly the basic thing we do. What is the mix between what I say and what is it based? Yeah.
I know for topics like Kabbalah, there's a minimum recommended age for study and base knowledge. And is there any such thing that anyone recommends for philosophy, for understanding?
Yes, you should be 40. Is anybody here under 40? You should leave right away.
So for philosophy, is there a similar?
What is the recommended age for philosophy? You see, there are different eras. The Torah doesn't say. Okay, the Torah doesn't say. Now, what the man is saying here is that you have to do it anyway. Now, at different times, different some have actually mentioned ages. In fact, they've organized the cherem and signed people's names on. So, Baruch Hashem, I'm old than all those ages. Okay, so I don't have a problem. If I personally didn't think it was for you to do it, I wouldn't invite you to come do it. And there's no Issa Ben HaTorah. Because of the problem which I made lighter, I didn't mean to make lighter, the very beginning of what we discussed today, is philosophy dangerous? So on the basis of that, most important posts in the Middle Ages, which is the period that we're really interested in, were not willing to say that therefore it's awesome. What they said is dangerous, so you should be mature. In the Chayyim, which Ramban suggested, they were burning the Islam of the Rambam, and Ramban wanted them to stop, so the Ramban suggested 25. Now, 25 in the Middle Ages is like 15 today. So, that's why I think it's okay. But in any event, it's a complicated question, I don't think it's important for us to discuss it right now, as to in what sense is philosophy dangerous. I don't think philosophy is dangerous. I think that there are many other things which you are going to be studying before the age of 40, which no one has ever said as well. No one has said that they're specifically yasir, which are far more dangerous. Some of you are going to go to college and study psychology. Much, much more inimical to Judaism than any philosophy in today. Some of you are going to study sociology, which is the most dangerous and the most antagonistic discipline to belief. Some of you are going to study physics. That's okay, right? I don't think so. One of the topics I want to talk about within a month or two is why all science is dangerous for emunah. Not because emunah is unscientific, but because science has certain assumptions which lead one to think in a certain manner. Philosophy is the least dangerous of all modern disciplines. 1966 was the last time that somebody studied philosophy and stopped believing in God. And I know him. And about 10 years ago, he was Chozer B'Tshuva and he became famous. And since then, that hasn't happened to anybody. It really hasn't. So I'm not that worried about it. But you know, the advice of the Rishonim does apply. That we should only be doing this if we have as our starting point. We have a starting point is that we're doing it because we want to believe more and understand better. And not because it's an open-ended discussion of what can I prove that's true. Which might, it's partially, well, it's relative also to what you asked before. In other words, we're not setting out now to say, well, should I or should I not believe in this, if I could do it. Okay, we're doing it for the reason that Ramban said. Today should be yeh ma'aminim, mitoch ma'asav, mitoch, what does it say? Mitoch miderech hakel mimasav. We want to know what is the things which can strengthen and deepen and richen our experience. And you know, it's not a Cartesian experience now. We're not saying I don't believe in anything that I can't prove, let's see what I can do. That we're not following the precepts of the Torah, we're following the precepts of the Ramban. And that there's always some problems that can be involved there, but I think more or less if we're tough and we're determined, then we'll go the right thing. But I'm glad you asked the question, because if we're not aware of it, then it's a better question if you're not aware of it than if you are aware of it. So Halacha Lamaisa, the Chayim and Ramban is Batel. It's been Batel for 700 and something years, and it's mutter to do kosher philosophy. This is glatt kosher philosophy. It's my fault. It's mutter to do glatt kosher philosophy from the age of 16 and a half. Did I miss anybody? If I did, he really should have come. But how old are you? We're talking about just chronological, nothing, not about emotional maturity. Any other questions? Yes.
We seem to be comfortable describing the Rambam position on demanding rational proof for God's existence as extreme, and therefore we can feel comfortable when we say, well, we can't really prove God's existence. But the Rambam had a lot of other positions that were definitely extreme in his time that we now accept as mainstream and give demand, and you're still like fighting for reality. And
non-visible,
like that.
I don't want to get hung up on the Ramban now. We'll get to the Ramban. We'll talk about the Ramban's point, different things. It was just a throw-in. I'm calling the Ramban extreme. I do not intend in any way to imply that therefore is that correct. I just meant that if you take a paraplay of opinions in Machshava, the Ramban has a extreme sense that it's at the end. A few opinions concerning the importance of philosophy. The Rambam, if you're not a philosopher, you're not. That's not a mainstream Jewish opinion, I think. But that's all I mean. I didn't mean it's extremism wrong. Extremism is wonderful. Extremism in the pursuit of Emunah is no vice. Who said that?
You.
Who? Eel?
You.
Ah, right. who did I rip it off from? Gosh, but you guys. Really? In sixth grade, you don't study American history?
No, no.
Extremism in the pursuit of liberty is no vice.
Oh.
Anything else?
I'm actually saying that the requirement or whatever doctrines that the Israelites are studying Kabbalah before you're 40 was talking about the average understanding of someone 40 at the time. I mean, the Aliyah and Ramachal didn't even live to 40.
We're not going to study Kabbalah. Okay, so it'll be okay. I'm not going to do any Kabbalah. If we do Kabbalah, when we do a little bit of Kabbalah, I won't admit it, and it'll be okay. We're not going to use any of the forbidden words. So, we'll forget it. You shouldn't study Kabbalah at any point. What's 39, 38? There's too much Kabbalah in Yeshiva. We're doing simple things. Ramban, Berubachia, things which the people wrote and really recommended. Ramban didn't think it was usher to read Ramban until I was before the age of 25. Okay, that's for sure, Okay, the Rabban did not think the safe was also to be. So he didn't include himself. He put should be going to go before you're 25. He put your letter, read the Rabban. That'll cover us pretty well. Berbach could should be Berbach age of 13. Berbach says in Hamtama that you have to learn Gemara, Abai, Bilal, that's after 13, 14, and then you should get into the really important things, like reading the Chumash Halachos. That's what we're going to be doing. We'll talk about different topics. We'll start, in order to maintain our intellectual credentials, we really actually will start with the traditional medieval proofs for the existence of God, for 3 weeks. And we'll see what they say, what they don't say, what they're good, what they're not good for. And after that, we will discuss various topics in the life of a Ovedish.